Open the door and step inside to a world of practical magic, where we blend the mystical and mundane worlds of the everyday witch. Presented by Wise Woman Witchery and hosted by Emily Morrison and Veronica Wade Lewis.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Welcome to The Witch Next Door. I'm Emily. And this week, we have a very special guest, Halo Quinn, author, storyteller, and magical creature, and witch, is joining me today. And we're going to be chatting about some of the work that they do in the world, as well as what's coming up for the Awakening Your Intuition Symposium, where Halo will be presenting a very, very cool class, which I'll wait and let them tell you all about. So, welcome.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. I'm so glad that we get this time to chat. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about, I mean, you got all these awesome titles, right? And I know about your book because you did come and present at a conference before. So I got to know a little bit about you, but maybe share with our audience what, you know, what your book's about and kind of what you do in the world.
Well, that was actually book number 8.
Oh, all right. Never mind. You should tell all the things because clearly I did not do my appropriate research here.
I'm not the best at marketing. This is my challenge because I'm like, I do the things, I put them out in the world. I'm like, the people that need them will find them. It'll be fine. And I have, some gorgeous, gorgeous books. So the one that you're referencing is Crimson Craft.
Yeah.
So that's Crimson Craft. And the tagline is Sexual Magic for the Solo Witch. And I chose that title, the subtitle, very carefully. I was a little bit poetic with the main title, but I chose the subtitle very carefully because it's not sex magic as in, you know, lewd, crude and downright fun, but it's that working with those energies of the divine eros, the erotic within us, embodied love, and where that comes into pleasure in the body and into our existence, into our life as we move through the world. So it's a sort of broad sense of those kind of life force sexual energies, which is very much informed by my training and history in reclaiming witchcraft. Uh-huh. And fairy, Anderson Fairy. So that's kind of fed into that quite a lot. So the Crimson Craft and the work that I've done that's come out of that, that's over the last couple of years, I've really been diving into that, is all about sinking into our embodiment and sinking into and feeling, developing and cultivating a sense of safety in our bodies so that we can connect into our deep power as witches and as magic workers and as magical creatures, because I always wanted to be a magical creature. So, and then I discovered the best way to do that was to be here in the world.
Right. In your skin.
In my skin. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that whole somatic piece, because I do think, as at least the way I relate to my own craft, is that my body is my most powerful and profound tool. And it also is the home of information that, you know, it channels information that I might not get otherwise if I'm just trying to focus only on my brain. It's like there's so many things my body can tell me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's that piece as well that, I mean, we're here in part of this earth. We are earthy creatures. We're not spirits somewhere out in the stars or on the astral or whatever. We are here.
Yes.
And so we've got all of those parts of ourselves. And we have this amazing one lifetime opportunity as the beings that we are this time round, whether or not we get another go this time round. We have the experiences, the embodied somatic experiences, and what are our bodies as they are to explore and experience life and magic as it is. So if we start to fall for, and I think of it like the overculture, like mainstream culture encourages disconnection from our bodies. Yeah, if we fall into that, and I did this for many years, always head in a book, head in the clouds, then we're cutting ourselves off from a huge part of our magical power, to put it bluntly.
Totally. And I would also just speak to that overculture piece of not only are we encouraged to disconnect, we're also really told that if you do connect, your body has to be a certain way. And you should be, with these parentheses, you should be having this experience and you should look like this. And
Yes.
so many of us are driven to this place of not liking ourselves, not liking the experience of being in our body because it doesn't fit into this mold. And we miss out on all the juiciness of being in this body.
Yes, exactly. And that's the thing that obviously we've all encountered this, or most of us have encountered this, these messages of either you should suppress the fleshly experiences of being embodied, that those tangible somatic sensual experiences, either suppress them because they're less valuable than the spiritual or the mental, or hold them up above everything else, and the only thing that matters is the physical and the
Right.
those excesses. And actually, we're both sides of this dichotomy that is a fictional duality of body and spirit. We're all of that. There's no split there except what we perceive.
Right, what we create.
Yeah.
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 That's I feel like going, Hallelujah. I mean,
Absolutely.
wrong platform, but just so much truth in that statement, for sure.
Yeah. And like, obviously, I mean, I have some chronic injuries, disabilities, etc. So I have I have a certain amount of experience with ongoing pain, and with that kind of my body being difficult to be in. It can be really difficult, and sometimes there's this piece about like disconnection, disassociation can be a really useful tool in moments to move through traumatic experiences. And sometimes we're dealing with so much, actually it's so hard to be in our bodies, and it's probably not right at certain points. But finding that space where, when we can, and for many of us, most of the time it is fine. It's just, I just want to speak to that piece that
I'm glad you
for some
did.
people, making that space within, and this is a big thing, making space within community to hold that possibility of it, the possibility of it being okay, to ease into that connection when we're not in the midst of trauma, drama, things that are going on. To have that space gives us space to heal that, connect in with our body as far as we can, and to begin to balance out some of these pieces.
And I really appreciate you speaking to that because I do, as a therapist in my day job, there is this way that at least academically, therapists talk about, oh, dissociation is bad. And really, dissociation can be, or separation from the body can be a total survival technique. The part where it becomes more challenging or more inhibiting is when you live there all the time. Because
Yes.
it's very easy once you've had that experience to be like, well, this is way better. I'm not gonna have this experience because suddenly the body becomes dangerous and the experience of being in the body becomes dangerous. And what's true is for most people, it's not all the time dangerous. So how, like what you're saying, how do you kind of make space to be able to be held in that transition back to, oh, it's okay to feel myself in my skin. This is a safe place to be sometimes.
Yeah.
Or maybe, hopefully, eventually, more often than not. Not for everyone.
Yeah. And this is one of the reasons that, This is one of the reasons that ritual can be really powerful, and not ritual to journey away and to get out into the spirit, but ritual to reconnect with the pleasurable sides of being in our bodies, and to reconnect with that pleasure in a safer space. And again, this is where I come back to that subtitle for the solo witch. This is work that it's important to be able to do. And when we add in other people, it can get complicated and messy and all sorts of things. So to come back to that space where it's just us, held in the magic, and to have that work on those things, we're also then not worrying about all of the complexities of genitalia and attraction or lack of attraction or I'm trying to think of a positive way of phrasing that, but our language is binary there. But it's all of those different pieces. So to be able to work on that space on ourselves, and held, and this is where the Crimson Craft work really is starting to come into its own, is that we're working with specific deities and spirit beings that hold that space so that there is that support that you don't need to worry about what a human thinks of you. You're being held in love by those beings. There is that space to explore those things without worrying about all of the extra bits. And the reason I felt that this was important was because I wanted to do this work, and all of the spaces that I found where this work was happening tended to be like not just sex positive, but lots of nudity and sex and genitalia focused stuff and duality focused stuff, which is actually a really uncomfortable space to be in when you're trying to work on yourself.
Absolutely. Well, it's just like vulnerability times 5,000. And you're like, wait, this is too vulnerable. And then sometimes, because you want to do that work, some people will jump over that fear or that no, and then end up with even more wounding from trying to heal, right?
I mean, and those spaces are incredibly important. Like, they're incredibly important. Like, they are needed, absolutely needed. And for some of us, actually, we need spaces where we're working on it without having to take all our clothes off. You know?
And I agree. I mean, it's both. It's and
Yeah.
both.
And both.
So that's just one of your books. Are all of your books focused on some sort of connection to presence?
So the my books range, as previously mentioned, whatever people think about the terminology. I have ADHD. I have a neurodivergent brain, and this I find both frustrating and wonderful because I get excited and curious and follow down lots of different directions. And there is something that underpins all of them. So I have four books out on working with fairies.
I
So
didn't know
the first
that, and
three.
I love fairies.
So do I, and I haven't been talking about them much for the last couple of years because I've been really focusing on the Crimson Craft work. But this is where where I began with magic. This is why I call myself a magical creature, is because when I was small, I wanted to be a fairy when I grew up, and then I discovered that that wasn't possible, and then I decided it was. And my approach to working with the fae is as spirit beings that are also like part of this earthly realm, and so they are the spirits that we share this space with, and they're similar but different to us, and so we can work on, and when I'm working with them, talking about them, it's about working on relationship. And part of working on relationship is coming into presence in yourself and on the land. So we have that element of embodiment there. My most recent book on working with the fair folk is actually about finding the clues in the folk tales. So how do we find our local folk tales, and how do we dig through those for the clues of how to build a decent relationship with the spirits that are local to us? And those, that kind of bracket of spirits. I also have my most popular book is actually Gods and Goddesses of Wales, which is again working through the mythology in the Mabinogi, because I live in Wales. I've lived here for almost 20 years, and when I moved here, the land, it felt like it said welcome home, and I wanted so much to give back, so I've been telling their stories. And so I wrote this little introduction to, again, stepping through the stories to meet those gods and goddesses, Rhiannon, Ceridwen, Taliesin, you know, meet them through their stories and then begin your relationship there. And another, the other couple of books that I've got are on are poetry. One is poetry around fairies and the exploring that relationship, and the other one is called Twisted: Honest Reflections of a Kinky Witch.
I love it.
So you'll notice there are themes all the way through this. There's that being in presence and relationship with the spirits, the fair folk in particular, working with fairies and that energetic current, stories and the importance of stories and how we work with them. And that's actually my next book coming up in next January is Storytelling for Magic. So it's actually like, how do you find a story, learn a story, work with a story? How do you create ritual from story? And how can we use those skills even when we're not storytellers? Like, how can we let that support our magic? So it's those pieces: embodiment, love, relationship, story, and yeah, the spirits of the land.
Yeah. Oh, so juicy. All of it. yeah. I just got my brain just went on a little tangent somewhere of just the fae folk have been so core to my own, I guess, my own magical exploration for so long. And so now I'm like, how come I don't have those books on my shelf? So how can people get your books? Hello.
You can order my books through all good bookstores and the big wicked ones as well. So that's the most of the my main pagan titles are published through Moon Books.
Okay.
So you can go direct to there. But if you go on one of the big wicked sites and search for Halo Quinn, then you'll find me as an author on there, and you'll find all my books, apart from Twisted, which is under Ms. Quinn, because I wanted to keep it ever so slightly separate.
Just a little.
Yeah, that's for the over 18s crowd. Or you can also go on my website, which is haloquinn.net. So that's my net where I catch everything.
That's
haloquinn.net, and I've got a page on there for my books.
Great. And I'll put that in the show notes too. So everybody who's listening, you can look over in the description of this podcast and find that link so you can do a little shopping.
Yes.
The juicy kind. Yeah. Wow. Wonderful. So this piece of storytelling, when did this come into your life?
So, now it would have been about a decade ago. Well, I say this, as a small child, at the same point that I was learning how to, I was hunting down the fae in the bushes. I was like climbing into trees and looking for them. And I'm like, I know you're here. Why can't I see you? This is quite a small child, occasionally convincing my father to let me stay out later as the dusk got in, and sneaking out of the house in the evening because there was a mushroom circle in the back garden. So sometimes I'd be staying at my dad's and the full moon would be out, and I'd look through the window and go, okay, and I'd sneak out after they'd gone to sleep and go and sit in the ring in the fairy circle. So about that same sort of time, I was also recording stories on a little cassette tape and putting it in my little Walkman and sticking it in I had a puppet that was a teddy bear, and it perfectly fit in this puppet. So I was making stories then as a child and telling them with my brothers and things like that. But officially, about 10 years ago, I'd been in Wales for a little while already. And obviously, I'd been working with the stories through reclaiming through magic for a while. And one of my friends I knew was a storyteller. And I saw him across the cafe. I was chatting to someone, and suddenly this idea popped into my head. And I couldn't resist it. I can't remember what the conversation was that I was having at the time, but I just said, "I'm really sorry, excuse me a second," bounced across the cafe and said, "Well, would you consider taking me on as an apprentice storyteller?" Goodness knows what got into me. I have no idea why, like, I thought that would be a good idea,
Your
because the closer
intuition.
my intuition, I was being pixie led. That's what it was. The stories were calling, the land was calling. And he said, "Yes, next month, I'm going to be doing some Iron Age reenactment, living history, storytelling in an Iron Age roundhouse, a bit south of here. We've got some time, we can sort you out a costume, you can come along and have a go." And so I apprenticed for that summer as an Iron Age living history. I'd never done living history before, as an Iron Age storyteller. Telling tales in a roundhouse, a smoky roundhouse, around the fire of that land. So telling those tales from y Mabinogi, the tales of Rhiannon and Pwech and Arawn, and all of the and Branwen and Bran, like all of the tales of that landscape that we can sort of we trace them back to medieval times. We've got that's kind of when we've got the manuscripts written down, but there's plenty of signs that say that they date to before then. So that's the thread that I followed, and the land just went, yeah, we like this. Now I'm still learning Welsh, and I'm really, really quite bad at it.
I don't mean to laugh. I've seen Welsh spelled, and I have, I understand it's a challenging language to learn.
Well, the see what's interesting is that the spelling is phonetic. So if I see it written down, I can generally read most of it out loud. Where I fall down is there are a couple of sounds. They're phonetic, but they're not phonetic English. It's phonetic for the Welsh alphabet, and there are a couple of
Yes.
sounds that my tongue trips over, and I get the emphasis in the wrong place. So the rhythm of the words is different. The emphasis is always on the penultimate syllable. But in English, it isn't. It's on like either the first or the last. I'm not quite sure. I don't know. I just speak it, so you know.
Yes.
But if you listen to the cadence of it, so the cadence of it is slightly different. And my brain just trips over it, and I keep coming back and coming back, and people will go, "No, you've gotten that wrong." And I'm like, "Okay." And I listen to them, and I can't hear what the difference is that I'm doing wrong. So I'm working at it and working at it. But I do, I try always before I tell the stories, I practice the names to try and make sure that I get the names right. And I can't promise that I always succeed, and I feel this is a problem, because there's a long history of issues with the Welsh, with the English people and the Welsh language and Cymraeg. So that's a huge, messy history that I am doing my best to honour. I wanted to speak to. But yeah, that's where it came into my life was that's there's a tangent for you. In the language, and that where it came into my life was that my friend was a storyteller, and my experience of it up till that point was within ritual and within magical spaces. And at that point, I suddenly thought, hang on, I can bring it out of that space and bring that magic and honor those beings, honor those stories, honor that history by sharing these tales. And then I promptly went on to rewrite a bunch of folk tales and t twist the ending and create a show called The Goblin Circus, but that's a whole other story.
Where do you bring your storytelling, like live in-person st storytelling now? Where do you find that showing up for you the most?
So I host the local storytelling circle.
Oh, nice.
In Aberystwyth, where I live, and Once a year, run a big event called the Goblin Masquerade, but I don't get to tell stories of that because I'm generally hosting. But most of the spaces I end up taking stories is in steampunk events and again in ritual. So I'll share at moots or in ritual spaces if we've got a particular thing, then I'll share stories then. And yeah, I really love that where that magic meets the words.
Well, and storytelling is such an art form. I remember when I was a kid, I was in the school for the arts, and we used to have a storyteller come, and she would bring stories from all, she traveled around the world meeting with indigenous cultures and learning stories, and then she would come and teach us about the culture and then share a story. And just it was so delicious to be, a child. I mean, I think I was in fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, and she came during that whole time. And it was just like, it was such a treat to have her, like, just all the movement and the voice inflection and the standing up and the, I don't know, just the theatrics of it all was delightful. And I drank it in. And so I just have such a love and respect for storytelling because it truly is, as I said, an art.
Thank you.
Well,
Yeah,
yeah.
I really enjoy the way that. So my PhD was actually in it was Heidegger's philosophy of art. So a particular philosophy of art as and it's the concept of art as something that reveals the world to us and remakes the world. And I applied that to the experience of storytelling and story listening. So that storytelling event. Because in that moment where we are together with a storyteller, where we are listening to a tale and they are telling, or we are telling and they are listening, the people who are present are creating this world through that action, through that act. And it's an act, a shared activity, a communal activity that creates this world that then holds us and can shift how we feel, can help us move through experiences, can show us things we would never otherwise have seen, can give us a break from our everyday life, which gives us space to relax, which rejuvenates us. Like there's so many different layers to that process that it feels to me that telling a story is exactly the same as casting a spell or an
That's,
enchantment.
yep. As you were speaking, that's what I was like, huh, what's this sound like? Oh, it sounds like magic. It sounds like ritual. It sounds, it just, I see the way they're interwoven.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so exciting because you get to then share that and offer that healing space and that transformative space to people who would never come to a pagan ritual. Because why would they? Like, and I'm like, well, yeah, I don't want you to come to a pagan ritual because you'll be uncomfortable here, but I can share a story with you and share that the some of the best bits of that. I mean, I love ritual, don't get me wrong. Absolutely love it. And we can go so deep in places and do such good work. But that to be able to offer that magical space to people without it being related to anything overtly that would make them uncomfortable is just such an honor, such a treat.
Well, I definitely hold the belief that ceremony, not necessarily just pagan ceremony, but ceremony and ritual is really just imperative to our own human healing and integration of concepts and, all of it. So, I feel like that is just another level of that, but it addresses a broader spectrum of people who might be turned off by the word ceremony or ritual or, just ex which is exactly what you're saying. I'm basically repeating what you're saying, but in my own words.
And I love that you like brought that piece in, and it is so important for humans. Like for each of us, we get such benefit from ceremony and ritualistic spaces, regardless of religion. So there's a reason it's there. And again, in our culture, well, particularly where I am, there's still a lot that's it's chapel country around here. There are still a lot of people who go to church. But there's an awful lot of people who don't have any religious connections or who have religious trauma from the way they were brought up or who have rejected it because of the way that the world discourages us from connecting with the spiritual, the same as it discourages us from connecting with the body.
Yes.
And so to have those spaces where people get that experience of that spiritual space in kind of ceremonial thing. I mean, you think about the way that a story is told, there is an opening and a closing. Even if the opening is someone sort of shifting into storyteller mode, that you don't need the magic words of once upon a time or whichever, rick-rack rock or what's the, there was another one, something about a sock. There's a traditional one about a sock from one culture, which is wonderful. And then again, the ending, and they lived happily ever after, or but that's a tale for another time, or thank you very much. You know, we've got an opening and a closing, we've got a space that we set up, there's a process, and also the pattern of storytelling. Once you, we all experience story in various different places, but that point when we come together with other people in that space sets it aside slightly, gives us that space to dive into it, and it still has a familiarity that we go, oh yeah, I understand this, I can allow myself to be carried by this. I am so valuable.
So good. Well, I'm curious about what is coming up for us. So for those of us that are lucky enough to be at the symposium, I'm curious how you're bringing this into intuition, some of these themes. Because I know that your title is Compass of Pleasure, embodied intuition, and I'm wondering.
There's curiosity there. So, and this again goes back into that Crimson Craft work, that embodiment work. So what we're going to do is tune into that space of pleasure within ourselves and explore pleasure as a guide towards what is good. So this isn't just about, oh, that feels good, I'll have more of that, let's eat all the chocolate in the world. You know, I may be biased, I quite like chocolate.
I was gonna say, I've never done
Never, never, never have not cleared out the cupboards of chocolate. No, why would I do that? It's not about that. It's about that dis so there's that element of discernment on, okay, what is actual pleasure when it's embodied, in when we are embodying it, when we're listening to our body. And there's this really interesting line and experience, and I don't want to go too far into it because this is part of the class, but that is the difference between the like the sugar hit we get from eating even a nice bit of chocolate, that oh yeah, that felt nice, and the say if you eat if you drink a cool glass of water when you're really thirsty on a hot day, and your body just goes, oh yes, this. And beginning to allow ourselves to tune into that discernment, to discern what is true pleasure, and then allowing that to guide us. And we might touch a little bit on some of the stories that are woven around this, and we might touch a little bit on relationship, you never know, but it'll be focused on that embodiment piece around, okay, if we allow ourselves to tune into our capacity for it, and how do we go about expanding our capacity for feeling pleasure of that kind that is genuine rather than a should or a band-aid, as it were.
Well, I am definitely looking forward to this. I loved your last class for the conference before, and so I'm excited to see how this all plays out and what my experience is. I mean, that's one of the delightful things for me about getting to be a host is I get to go to all these classes.
Oh, absolutely.
So I'm looking forward to that. And for anybody who hasn't signed up yet, the Cauldron of Wisdom Awakening Intuition Symposium is happening April 26th and 27th. It's virtual, so you can tune in from anywhere. And you can hop over to wisewomanwitchery.com/conferences, and I'll put that also in the show notes. But come and hang out with us and discover your intuition, because there's going to be a lot of information and experiences. And really, I think, that's so much what we've been talking about, Halo, is this feeling of, the feeling, the experience that we're having in our bodies. And that's so much where our intuition lives.
Yeah,
So,
this is the craft of witchcraft. It's a
yes.
doing.
Yes. And so that's what we'll be doing a lot of things. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking this time and being here. I know I thanked you before, but it's wonderful to talk to you and to get to learn even more about you that I didn't know, which is always exciting. The box is open and all the things are coming out.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, this afternoon I'm going to be rehearsing for a storytelling show, actually, which is Shakespeare crossed with fairy tales and where those threads tie together.
Oh.
I'm going to be taking to the Art Centre, doing the Art Centre. It's with a friend of mine, Millie Jackdaw. And then next month, hopefully, we're going to be performing it in the local woodlands. So that will be fun.
Oh my goodness. So for anybody who happens to be listening who might live near you, what is this? Where can they get access to this kind of event?
So, if you are in wild, wet, windy West Wales, or Mid Wales, that's also fairly close, then check out the Aberystwyth Arts Centre. And you can have I don't think it's up on Longwood yet. But if you head over to my website, which will be in the show notes, haloquinn.net, then you can find the link to my mailing list where I send out the information about upcoming shows and magical stuff that's going on, and also updates on what's happening. It should be on the website. I think I need to update the show page. But yeah, there's all sorts of different things on there that you can go and explore, depending on which thread calls to you.
Fun. Wonderful. Well, we'll get people over there so they can come and check out all this goodness that you're creating in the world for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah.
My mission is to help, is to re-enchant the world, and I
Oh.
think we do that together.
I love that. Now I feel like I need a bumper sticker that says
I look forward to seeing them.
that. Oh. Well, thank you again, Halo, and I'm looking forward to connecting with you here in just like a really short amount of time. Be seeing you in just
Yeah.
over a week.
Thank you for having me, and thank you to people for listening.
Yes, thank you as always to everyone for tuning in. And until next time, keep it magical. Hey there, friends. Emily here from Wise Woman Witchery. If you like what you hear on The Witch Next Door, I invite you to support us. You can do that by rating, reviewing, liking, following, what else? Whatever else it is that you do on the platform you like to listen to podcasts on. By doing these things, it actually helps other people find us. And in that way, helps us spread the magic. So I appreciate you taking the time to do that. And thanks for being a listener. Thank you for joining us on The Witch Next Door. Join us next week as we explore more ways to make every day more magical. Can't wait? Visit wisewomanwitchery.com or follow Wise Woman Witchery on Facebook and Instagram to stay up to date on all current offerings and be a part of the tribe. All episodes are created by Emily Morrison and Veronica Wade Lewis. Music written and performed by Jean Cornelius.